This is a HeadGum Podcast.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Guide to Everything, a podcast about everything. I'm one of your hosts, Tom.
And I'm Tim.
Tim, how are you doing this week?
Tom, I'm fired up.
Yeah? How come?
Just normal kind
just
of
normal fired
lust
up.
For life.
Wow. Well, I'm injured. I'd like it.
Yeah, well, let the record show that you're injured. How did yeah. What's
injured?
I don't
injured? Know what happened. My Achilles tendon really hurts on one foot.
This is not both.
Yeah, at least it's not both. You're right. But I don't know. It keeps hurting more and more. I've got ice on it right now.
And you
now.
Didn't do... You're not a very... Tom, is this going to offend you? You're not a very active person?
No.
That's not offensive, right?
No. I'm trying to be more active. Yeah. But it's hard when my body is working against me.
Yeah.
In such a cruel way.
So if I can describe what's going on now, right now you're readjusting. You have a belt around your ankle.
Yeah, well, the belt was your idea.
And it's securing an ice pack in place, but not very well.
Not very well at all. I'm going to do it with my hand from now on.
Okay.
If only my hand hurt, too, this would be great.
Yeah. Ice packs, Tom.
Yeah.
I don't think they actually do anything.
You don't think anything does anything.
Yeah, I think you just got to power through whenever you
have
pain.
No, ice packs, when's the last time you've used an ice pack?
Not that long ago. I've had like neck pain.
Why'd you use it if you don't think they work?
Because what else are you going to do?
I mean, you can try complaining about it on a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, is it working for you? It's probably working about as well as the ice.
It's making me feel a lot better. No, the ice helps because it's like inflamed. I can feel it's like puffy for some reason.
Yeah.
So it's helping lower that inflammation.
Yeah.
Tim, I'll be running 100-yard dashes back and forth here before the time the episode's over.
Yeah. I think you're going to be okay, but yeah. I really wish you would...
I just want everybody to know that I'm doing this not under duress. That's what I was going to say, like you were holding a gun to my
you're,
head.
You're heroically
playing true professional.
Injured.
Yeah.
Like, what's his face? The famous quarterback from the recent Super Bowl.
Mahomes?
Yeah, didn't he screw up his ankle?
Yeah,
This is exactly like
Pat
Mahomes.
We have a lot in common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pat Mahomes?
Maybe.
Pete Mahomes?
Pepe Mahomes?
You're thinking Pepe Le Pew, Tom.
Yeah.
And guess what? He's been canceled.
Pepe Le Pew's been canceled for what?
Tom,
for trying to find love?
He wasn't trying. He was doing it in a bad way. Speaking of canceled cartoons, Tom, this week, we're talking about Dilbert.
Yeah,
Dilbert.
Well, Dilbert hasn't been canceled. Well, I mean, I guess his comic has,
like literally.
Yeah.
All right. Against all odds, it's 2023.
Yeah.
And Dilbert is in the news.
Kind of. I feel like the creator of Dilbert's in the news. And as a result, like as a footnote, it's like you probably didn't realize that papers are still running new strips of Dilbert every day. Well, they're not anymore.
Right. So Dilbert is a comic strip that appeared up until recently primarily in newspapers.
Yeah.
And newspaper comics, particularly at this time, is the weirdest freaking world, right?
I mean, I don't know too much about what the current comic strip landscape looks like.
Well, the way that I'm thinking of it is that like newspaper distribution
exists.
Is like at an all-time low, right? Mm-hmm. Like fewer and fewer people are reading the newspaper. And if you're interested in newspaper comics, you can just go to the syndicate's website, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I don't even know if newspapers, you know, if you're reading a newspaper online,
yeah, I don't
if
you think
can
you
get
can,
their funny pages.
I don't think you can. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you can get, usually you can get like the word jumble and the crossword and stuff.
Online?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, for some papers, at least. But again, I'm thinking maybe like papers that do their own.
Yeah.
Not ones that carry like syndicated crosswords or whatever.
But I think that stuff you can just get. Like you can go to a comics site and just be like, hey, here's today's Dilbert. Here's today's Peanuts. Are they still running classic Peanuts?
Probably.
Why not? Peanuts is great.
Mm-hmm.
Peanuts, Tom.
Yeah.
Is great.
That, you said that already.
You got Charlie Brown, right?
Yeah.
Lovable loser. You got, he's lovable to us, but like literally everyone on the in the strip treats him like crap. You got Lucy, who's just a jerk all the time. There's like Linus too, I think.
At least three characters. Snoopy.
Yeah.
Woodstock.
See, I think what happened is as kids, you got Snoopy there. And you think, like, oh, this is a like talking dog comic.
Yeah. He
but no,
talk.
It's about sad kids.
Yeah, it's about depressed children. And a dog that doesn't talk and has a friend that's only a bird.
Yeah.
Not only a bird. Only has a friend that's
a bird. I mean,
bird.
He is only a bird.
Yeah. He's like a pretty smart for a bird, though.
Yeah, I don't know. Whenever he talks, you just see like little sticks in the bubble.
Yeah. So yeah, the world of comic strips in 2023 is weird to begin with, but like, it's always been weird. It's crazy that there are new comic strips every day. Like that's a lot to do. Not a lot, like no, very few comics are drawn very like, you know, in great detail where you'd look at it and be like, oh wow, that must have taken hours to draw. But to come up with like a joke that works in like three panels.
It's a very funny medium that is like in the newspaper, we're going to print like a series of like one-liners.
Yeah, essentially.
With like goofy characters. And this will be in the newspaper for some reason.
Yeah, there will be little, just like little jokes, but not very funny, not like laugh out loud funny. Yeah. Maybe you'll get a huh out of it.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the Lockhorns, consistently funny.
Well, that's a one panel, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd rather draw a one panel than a three panel. I think I'd do a better job at that.
That's harder. I mean, it's a lot less to draw. third less drawing.
Yeah, but one panels usually have more detailed drawings than three panels, I feel like.
Maybe. It depends on, if we're thinking of Walt Kelly's Pogo.
Yeah.
Then but like, back in the day, back when it was like, you'll be on the front page, you'll be like, Pearl Harbor was attacked. And then you'd be like, oh, God. And then you like go 30 pages in. And like then it would be like a full color.
Yeah. Full
page.
Not when Pearl Harbor was attacked.
Why?
They didn't have full color newspapers then.
The funny pages might
have
been.
I don't think they had. Not for the funny. Well, we'll put the Pearl Harbor being attacked in black and white, but make sure Peanuts is in color or whatever. Peanuts wasn't around back then.
Yeah, no, that's when like Pogo and like Crazy Cat or whatever was like really
I don't
big.
Think so. I think that was before all that.
I don't know, Tom.
I think that was still when they had like the Yellow Kid. Is that what I'm thinking of?
The Yellow Kid.
There was like an old comic that was like the Yellow Kid, and it's like where yellow journalism comes from. The phrase. I forget. Look it up. Good little library.
What are you coming to this show for information for? And then like it just got scaled back more and more, but people were still like, yep, we need to keep the funny pages in here.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily for kids. And then there was like serious ones like Apartment 3G.
Well, I think also since all of these are syndicated, that it must just be that the newspapers pay so little for it. You know, on average, that's like, look, the funny pages costs to license that every day costs less to fill a page than it does paying reporters or whatever.
Yeah. So like.
So why not just keep running it?
Yeah. So they just lay off the reporters and syndicate more. Then wouldn't they want more than three panels? Wouldn't they be like, hey.
Well, that's what Sunday's for. The Sunday papers.
Yeah, but the way that I... So the only comic that I really know about besides Dilbert, oddly...
yeah, which is, we'll get to.
Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, of course.
And it's a wonderful creator, Bill Watterson, mm-hmm. who's just like a crank in the best way.
Right, the anti-Scott Adams.
Exactly. And he would always like fight the newspapers because they wanted to give less and less space to the comics.
Right.
And it'd be like, if it's really that cheap to syndicate, wouldn't they be like, yeah, sure, we'll pay the same price and just give us a 6-page Calvin and Hobbes every Sunday, right?
Well, I wonder if that had to do with...
Buying ink by the barrel.
Well, I was going to say the Sunday paper, like the color comics. I remember like a lot of Calvin and Hobbes comics were huge. They took up like half the page.
I know. He negotiated that. He was just like, you know what? I don't want to like, they would often. Mm-hmm. So like, you know how it's like three rows?
Yeah.
A lot of in the Sunday comics, right? Mm-hmm. So like it'd be a rectangle, like split into thirds. Yeah. And the top, like the top row of panels would always have to be a throwaway joke because a lot of newspapers would cut that off start with the second and just sort of the second and third. Mm-hmm. And Bill Watterson was like, no. Like, if you want my comic strip, and...
then don't throw part of it away.
And, newspapers were like, no, we'll buy it and do what we want. And then, like, I don't know. It's just like, okay, we'll stop giving it to you.
Yeah.
He played chicken a lot, and he won.
Yeah.
He went on all these sabbaticals, and his syndicate was just like, all right, we have to let you. He's like, if you don't let me do this, I'll just quit. They were like, yeah, he probably will. Go live in a cabin somewhere. Well,
but then
once they agreed to it, mm-hmm. like you'll see his Sunday comics like weren't even in panels. It was just like this big rectangle that like he did whatever he wanted in it. A great man, Bill Watterson.
Well, I was going to say that he was, like a true, like artist of the format. Not to say that there aren't other people
not
that are like that.
Scott Adams isn't a true artist.
No, but he was like, I feel like he was really trying to push the medium a lot.
Yeah.
Like he was doing stuff that other people hadn't tried before. And, you know, there are things like Far Side that were also doing things people hadn't done before. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. I think like during that time in the 90s was like a very interesting time for newspaper comics.
Mostly, the Far Side and Calvin and Hobbes.
And that was awesome.
And that one week where vandals broke into distributed Peanuts and drew hair onto Charlie Brown for a full week.
Wait, what?
there was a week. I don't know if this was just in our local paper.
Okay.
Newsday. Or if it was like... nationwide.
Uh-huh.
But, this one Monday through Friday, they printed Peanuts. And whenever Charlie Brown was in it, there was hair scribbled on because he had a bald head.
Yeah.
Somebody scribbled hair. Vandals.
And nobody realized that during, like, the whole process?
I don't think anybody was paying attention to the funny page. And I think they were like, this is the strip we got. We got to run it. Like,
yeah.
We're on deadline here. When they noticed it, somebody yelled, stop the presses.
Right. And nobody noticed that?
I mean, I noticed
it. Well, I mean, my question was, did they ever catch the vandals? Why do you say vandals like it was multiple people?
I mean,
they had one who was a lookout.
Maybe. How do you get hair scribbler? Hold on. Charlie Brown, hair 90s.
Because that strikes me as like having been somebody who worked there doing that.
Yeah, still a vandal.
Yeah, but I can't. But you said somebody broke in and did it. And I think if somebody broke
job.
I don't think they would even know where to find the newspaper. Like, maybe. If you had the idea, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to break in and I'm going to put hair on Charlie Brown. Where would you start?
You start staking it out.
Staking out what? The newspaper stand? You start do your small research. Time, you just do it paper by paper.
Yeah. You work your way up.
Yeah.
Tom, mm-hmm. It happened. It affected me. They did a little story about it on the news.
Yeah.
I remember.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and then the lighter side. It's like, it's not a lighter. This is a crime.
It's somebody vandalizing art.
Yeah.
But as you alluded to, Tim, you grew up, you were a big Dilbert head. And is it correct to say you're a bigger fan now than ever?
Tom, I wasn't a big Dilbert head.
Uh-huh.
But I enjoyed the newspaper comics.
Okay.
Even though, like, I'd read Doonesbury every day and I didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I was the same. I always read the comics and, like, loved Calvin and Hobbes, loved The Far Side, like, enjoyed Garfield, enjoyed Peanuts, even occasionally enjoyed Kathy.
Yeah, it wasn't for you, Tom.
I know, but I could still read it, and it broadened my horizons. But yeah, then there were always like weird ones in there where it's like, I don't know who this is for.
Who was reading Brenda Starr in 1996? Exactly.
Or even like, I remember as a kid always getting excited that there was a Spider-Man comic strip. But it was
not
like,
in the newspaper I got, let me tell you.
No?
That was in like the Daily News or something.
Yeah, I think so. And it was
Daily Bugle.
every week when the editor-in-chief couldn't get pictures of Spider-Man, he instead just had somebody draw some and put it in the paper. But they were just like the worst Spider-Man comics. I don't know if they were reprint. I don't think so. They must have been just for the newspaper. But it was always just like, you know, a comic book has pages in it.
Right.
They would still kind of tell the same type of story, but just in like an abbreviated format.
Yeah.
But not even really. It was like the only thing.
But it's free to a kid. You don't have to go to the comic
book. But the only thing
store.
They were really pulling from was like the 1960s Spider-Man.
Did he fight Doc Ock?
Yeah. He never fought Venom. Or like any of the newer characters that they had come up with. And especially as like a comic book kid in the 90s that I was like, oh, man, I want to see, Ben Reilly, the clone of Peter Parker that doesn't know he's a clone.
Yeah,
it's
we
like,
all wanted to see Ben Reilly, the clone that didn't know he was a clone.
But it's like they're not going to put that shit in the newspaper. They're going to have him fight Rhino again.
How are you gonna explain that in three panels?
Exactly. So it was just kind of dumbed down. I feel like most of the comic was just him arguing with J. Jonah Jameson every week.
Right.
Like a lot of the comic took place in the Daily Bugle. And maybe that was smart. Maybe that was intentional. They were like, you know what? We'll keep these newspaper men happy. We'll set most of our comic in a newspaper office.
Hey, flattery, we'll get you everywhere in the newspaper world.
But I remember reading Dilbert as a kid, I don't remember it. I don't remember like disliking it. Like it wasn't like Doonesbury. What's the other
Bloom
one?
Bloom County.
We're
that
like,
also, I never had any idea what the hell was
like,
going on.
Like those went over my head.
Yeah.
There
was like wordplay in them and stuff.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, there's a joke about, you know, Nixon's second presidential campaign. Yeah. It's like, well, I don't know what that is. So Dilbert didn't go over my head, but it also never really clicked with me.
Did go over my head quite a bit because it was a lot of it. Like, okay.
Explain what Dilbert is for anybody looking to get into it now.
Yeah. Good luck. And I will say, this guy, Scott Adams, that created Dilbert, I don't think he's a good man.
No.
I think he's a bad guy.
Yeah. He's been a bad guy for a long time.
But, like, also, like, who should know that? Like, unless the comic strip is about bad ideas and bad thoughts and bad opinions, which it wasn't
sometimes
at the time,
was,
but like
yeah.
morphed into that. Like, we shouldn't know anything about the guys that draw the comics.
Yeah.
Right? What do you know about Jim Davis?
But you know about Bill Watterson.
I know that he's a. I know his like philosophies on like his art.
Oh, okay.
Right?
But
like,
not
I don't
like
know.
His personal opinions
look,
about...
I probably don't want to know Bill Watterson's personal politics, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Yeah, exactly. I know that like he doesn't like commercialization of his art.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wants to control how...
his art is put out there.
Yeah, and who profits from it. And, mm-hmm. like, that's great. That's fine. I respect that. But, like, I don't want to know his thoughts on, like, the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are you making fart noises with
that
thing?
That was the ice pack.
Okay. All right.
Is that just good for... my ankle, although my ankle still really hurts. It didn't, maybe it did. It did a little bit.
But I think this is a bad thing about mm-hmm. modern life is that we know a lot about thoughts of people that like, why do we know Pat Sajak's politics? Like, why do we know anything about, anything like anybody's thinking if they're just like,
well, why
something?
Do people know our politics, Tim?
They don't, Tom. We're ciphers.
but yeah, as you were saying, Scott Adams, for anybody that doesn't know, he I guess, what was it, a week or two ago
it's
now?
It's in the news. Gilbert's in the news. He's in the news because he said unabashedly racist things.
Yeah, segregationist like things that white people, black people don't like white people, according to some... survey, which like he got
this.
Wrong
it was,
anyway,
and it was like a white supremacist phrase. That,
yeah,
like, it's whatever. It is whatever. Mm-hmm. He will defend his, you know, in his shitty edgelord way. I don't even know if that's it, but like he'll be like, well, if you use logic, technically what I was saying wasn't racist because it's like, shut up, like, guy stinks.
Yeah. Well, and he blamed the press when it's like, it was your live stream.
Yeah.
And it's like, people aren't reading the New York Times account of this. They're going on Twitter or Facebook or whatever and watching this like minute and a half long clip, unedited, of you saying horrible things that even if it was like that was taken out of context, you can't take what he said out of context. But he's not even claiming no, I guess he is kind of claiming it was taken out of context,
right?
But again, it's like what context, unless you were pretending to be somebody else saying this.
Well, he also says like, I've been identifying as black for a while because I like to be on the winning team,
right? yeah
and I like to help, and I always thought if you help the black community, that's sort of the biggest lever, you could find the biggest benefit. And then he says,
well, that I mean, that is the thing that he's the second most famous for, is all the help he's given the black community.
Yeah, exactly. And then he said, I would say, based on the current way things are going, the best advice I would give to white people is to get the hell away from black people. Just get the F away. Wherever you have to go, just get away. There's no fixing this.
And then he said that's what he did.
Yeah. Anyway, look, I didn't even want to get into this. We could have just said, like, he's a bad dude.
Yeah, but some people don't know what it was he did.
Yeah.
You know, some people aren't buying the newspaper for the funny pages or going online for the funny pages.
This is on the front page, Tom.
And happening to see, the comic book news is comic strip news.
Dilbert mm-hmm. is an American comic strip written and illustrated by Scott Adams, first published on April 16th, 1989.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't realize it was that old.
It is known for its satirical office humor about a white-collar micromanaged office with engineer Dilbert as the title character. Very successful in the 90s. I think
it definitely
overlapped with the things that made the movie Office Space
resonate. Yeah,
so much.
You know, as the idea of like cubicles were becoming a thing, and I guess office culture was changing.
Yeah.
And he just kind of really, caught into that, tapped into the zeitgeist. I was going to say like the Drew Carey Show, I feel like kind of did that too. Yeah. Of like, office work stinks, huh? Like you have to work with all these weird people and your bosses are stupid and.
Yeah. About like, management being dumb and
right.
I guess it probably coincided with the larger culture shift from like manufacturing to office work, right?
Yeah, yeah, and companies becoming larger and
Anyway, cut to 1995 when I'm 13 years old. And so this is like all, you know, the panels are all about like, oh yeah, like
you're 13, you've just started your first office job.
Yeah, like I had no this has been judged the number one best Dilbert cartoon by corporatecomplianceinsights.com.
So I mean, that is who you should go to for. They would know.
It's Dilbert and his boss sitting at a table.
Okay.
And his boss
This
says,
is great. This is like a comic strip audiobook.
Yeah. His boss says to Dilbert, according to the anonymous online employee survey, you don't trust management. What's up with that? And then there's a panel of just Dilbert silently looking at the boss. And then the boss says, oh, right.
What?
You see, Dilbert didn't. He said he doesn't trust.
Okay,
so
I
for
get it.
Some reason, stuff like that was like, I understand the logic of that.
Stuff like that, you were pissing your pants, laughing at it.
No, I did. I understood the logic, and I guess that is like a clever, technically like a clever. Yeah. Like it makes sense,
right? And I feel
but
like that
it's not a culture that I know. Like right. I was just like, that guy must be management. Right. Like all right. If I'm gonna assume this guy is management, then right. Okay.
And I'm guessing management's kind of like the way mom and dad are for me. Yeah.
I had this a shirt, a Dilbert shirt that said, casual day has gone too far.
What a weird kid.
Yeah, and it was a picture of Dilbert is walking around in his bathrobe.
Yeah.
One of his coworkers is dressed up like a superhero. Another one is walking around naked. And another, should have called it here. And then there's a man in a tutu.
Oh.
Which, that's probably, everything else was probably fine to Scott Adams.
Right.
Especially like, I should be allowed to be naked at work. Why? Because some women are going to complain.
But that guy shouldn't be allowed to wear a tutu. Yeah. That's disgusting.
Yeah, I don't know why I was into it.
Did you have the books? Did you buy the books too, or just the shirts? Or you just wanted the apparel?
This is how weird I was, Tom.
Okay.
Okay, so like this became a thing. Like I could see why this strip became popular because people would clip it out and put it on the walls of their cubicle and like
share
it around the office.
Yeah,
and it's like,
people would get, oh,
it's
yeah,
like,
it's
this
like
is
this
relatable,
place.
You know?
Yeah.
But to me, so he came out, Scott Adams was like, okay, I'm going to write an actual business book.
Right, yeah.
And he wrote this book, The Dilbert Principle.
Okay.
And it was, he had a theory, you know the Peter Principle?
No.
It's basically that somebody, like in a corporate culture, a person will keep getting promoted if they're good at their job to the point where they no longer have the skill. Like you're good at this role.
Yeah, they get promoted like one above what they should be.
Exactly, and that's where they stay, and that is detrimental to the company because while they might have been great at these other jobs, like they plateau here and they don't have their skill set.
And you hear that a lot about like people get promoted to management, and it's like they're not a good manager. They were good at what they were doing before, not managing people doing that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, the Dilbert Principle is a satirical concept, which states that companies tend to promote incompetent employees to management to minimize their ability to harm productivity. And I actually have seen that happen where it's just like, hey, he's a good guy. He's not really good at this. Let's have him manage some
people. Yeah, let's just have him be in charge of something.
Yeah. But so he wrote a book.
Yeah.
That was like a business book. And I was 14. It came out in 1996. I was 13 or 14 when this happened.
And you're like, I got to figure out how to climb the corporate ladder.
Yeah, I went to Borders. But like, my parents drove me to Borders Books. I bought this.
You're wearing your little Dilbert Casual Friday shirt.
I read the whole goddamn book. I didn't understand any of it. But once in a while, every few pages, there'd be a Dilbert cartoon.
Oh, okay. And you're like, Dilbert.
But what was I reading this like management book for?
Yeah. And also... I was going to say like, what did this guy know? Obviously this guy has no problem talking about things he doesn't know, but by my assumptions about like how old he is and that starting in 89, he was like in his 20s when he started, Dilbert, right?
Let's see, 89, he was born in 57. So he like in his 30s.
Okay. All right, he's got a leg to stand on.
Yeah,
not for writing a business book, but
I mean, he's a guy
for knowing that, corporate drudgery.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has a chip on his shoulder and has always had a chip on.
I heard that he got fired from those other jobs for being white.
We'll get to that in a minute.
This episode of The Complete Guide to Everything is sponsored by BetterHelp. Tim, you ever have something you really need to get off your chest?
Constantly, Tom.
Constantly? You're just walking around, you want to tell people you hate them or you love them or you know where the treasure is buried.
Interesting you went negative first, but yeah, no, there's a lot of things.
Love, second. And then the treasure, that's also
the positive. Treasure is the wild card.
It could be good or it could be bad. We all carry around different stressors, big and small, and when we keep them bottled up, it can start affecting us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. As everybody knows, we're big proponents of therapy on this podcast.
Love it.
We think it's... something anyone can benefit from. It's not just people who've been through traumatic experiences or going through a rough patch. Even if you're doing good, maybe you can do better. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/completeguide today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/completeguide.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like forgetting to mute yourself on Zoom and everyone hears you trash talking your coworkers and farting and pooping in the bathroom.
What do you do on Zoom meetings, Tom?
It may just be a bit of harmless banter, but what happens if your boss overhears you talking about his receding hairline?
Get in my office!
I've told you not to do that!
Reynolds! Have you been talking about my hairline?
Internet service providers.
Like my wife.
Internet service providers know every single website you visit, and ISPs can and do sell this information to ad companies and tech giants who use your data to target you. Yeah, you ever wonder why you're like, I was looking on this on Twitter. Why am I getting Facebook ads? Because the ISPs are selling you out, baby. ExpressVPN reroutes your network traffic through a secure encrypted tunnel so your ISP can't see or sell your online activity. So simple to use. You fire up the app and you click one button. It doesn't get any easier than that. Rated number one by CNET and TechRadar, it works on phones, laptops, even routers. So everyone can share your Wi-Fi. Everyone who shares your Wi-Fi can be protected. Tim, I use ExpressVPN all the time, wherever I'm, even when I'm connected at home. You never know. I don't want my ISP knowing anything about me.
Agreed. They're a bunch of scoundrels, if you ask me.
Protect your online privacy by visiting expressvpn.com/guide today. That's expressvpn.com/guide. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/guide.
All right. So you got Dilbert.
Mm-hmm.
You got Dogbert.
Okay. And now Dogbert's what? A dog that's Dilbert?
Yeah, he's a dog. He's not Dilbert. He's his own guy.
Well, he's got a name like Dilbert.
Yeah.
And is he Dilbert's dog?
Yeah, kind of. But also, you'll see that he's a little bit of a scamp, hellbent on taking over the world. He's like a proto Stewie Griffin, your favorite character in all of literature.
Well, it sounds like he's also kind of like a Snoopy. We're like, Snoopy is Charlie Brown's dog, but, you know, he's kind of an independent. He's out there doing stuff.
No, Dogbert is fully talking to Dilbert all the time.
Oh,
he's
okay.
Somehow in the office, like, interacting with coworkers, too.
Okay.
That's not important. There's also Catbert. Bless you.
Thank you.
Catbert runs human resources.
So, an anthropomorphic cat.
Yeah. Only from the twisted mind of Scott Adams.
So, do like talking animals exist outside of these two animals in the Dilbert verse?
Yeah, of course, Tom. There's also Ratbert.
Oh, okay.
The Dilbert wiki says, he's a dim-witted, overly optimistic rat who just wants to be loved.
And now, is Dilbert giving all these guys their names?
No, why would he name...
Well, is he wondering why they're all Berts, too?
No, I think that's just kind of the world they live in. There's also Bob and Don.
Okay.
And their son Rex, and they're dinosaurs.
What?
Yeah.
And they work in the office?
Unclear. I don't think so. They were discovered after Dilbert figured out that dinosaurs were not extinct, just hiding.
Okay.
I don't think, like, I think...
Did that happen in the 90s, or did that happen afterwards?
I think so. I think there were, like, some flights of fancy that just get back to the things where it's like, geez, my boss sure is dumb.
Right. I mean, that's always been the craziest thing about these comic strip writers, is, like, the volume of comics they have to produce, and the, like, kind of, like, guide rails there of, like, don't try anything too crazy here. Because then people are going to be mad about it.
Right.
Like, you have to give people what they want every day.
Yeah, but you also have to spread your wings and fly and get Ratbert in there.
Yeah.
Just a rat, an optimistic rat that just wants to be loved.
Yeah, all right.
There's a lot of stuff, and I don't know. I think this might have reared its head in the 90s, but things were just, like, a little less... of a pressure cooker.
Right.
But, like, I'm sure there was so much about PC culture in the strips in the 90s.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. I feel like everybody joked about that.
Yeah, and there was kind of more of a, it wasn't a, like, political thing. It was kind of like everybody was like, PC culture, because a lot of times it was used, I feel like, by politicians to kind of like talk their way out of something they've done or minimize something they did by using different language.
Yeah, I did read, like, I was reading about Scott Adams' deplorable political views, and it seems like he has evolved. Like, at one point, he was just like, I think in 2015, he said he's apolitical and doesn't vote.
Yeah.
And then a couple years before that, he's like, yeah, I don't know anything about politics. I'd be inclined to just follow anything Bill Clinton says because he's the most reasonable man I've ever seen in public life or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Cut to like 2 years later when he was just like, Hillary Clinton's the devil and she's sending kids through Wayfair.com to Tom Hanks to be... feasted on.
Yeah. There's something along those lines.
I don't think he didn't go like QAnon, right?
Oh, I don't know if he's a QAnon guy or not.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Q cares.
That's true.
About you,
Tom? I know. That's why I hang on his every word.
And there's a there's a female coworker, Tom, mm-hmm. named Alice.
Mm-hmm.
She's opposed.
She's
to
the one with the triangle hair.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's opposed to the feminist views of the company they work for.
Oh, so the perfect woman.
Yeah.
In Scott Adams' eyes.
I'm reading the Dilbert Wiki descriptions. Mm-hmm. So there's Asok.
Okay.
He's the young, eager Indian intern.
Okay.
Okay. There's a garbage
man. So far, okay.
There's a garbage man who's a genius, which is like, you know,
Goodwill
hey,
Hunting.
Yeah. Exactly. There's the pointy haired boss.
Oh,
and
okay.
He's the dumbest guy in the strip because he's the boss,
right?
And we know about the Dilbert principle, right?
Of course. I live my life by it.
This is a guy I don't remember coming across, but I think he might be my favorite guy just based on this. His name is Loud Howard.
All right.
And Loud Howard is an extremely loud, well-meaning, yet extremely gullible engineer. I bet he's fun.
Yeah.
But I bet he's just like, you know, there's a lot of jokes about how, like, management told me that hiring women is good. And then Dogbert explains why that's not good in a wry way.
What is Dilbert's personality? He doesn't really have
milk
one, right?
Toast. Yeah.
Like he's kind of like almost the straight man.
Yeah, he's frustrated. He's described as.
Okay.
He tries to find logic and righteousness in an evil and crazy business world.
Wow. So he's a hero in a way.
Yeah.
It's weird that you were real into Dilbert, because I think around this time when I was a kid, I got real into Dennis Miller.
Really?
Yeah, and watching the Dennis Miller show.
Kids with HBO, HBO households were way different.
Yeah.
Because, like, you and Dan had HBO, and you were watching, like, Dennis Miller and Larry Sanders and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, and I was just, like, I don't know, watching Ren and Stimpy and reading Dilbert.
Yeah, we were pretty sophisticated. And don't forget real sex.
I know.
But only if everybody else was asleep and
everybody knew what was going on.
And you could I remember I would have my finger constantly like half depressing the last channel button.
That would just
bring you to
case,
a different channel. So if I heard my parents' bedroom door open, I could just very quickly hit that.
What a
I mean, that was also back when like TVs would take a while to change channels. What a bummer of a show. Oh, Real Sex? Yeah.
We shouldn't have been watching Real Sex at that point.
No.
We should have been watching
fake sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was too real a lot of times.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that was good. Maybe that was healthier. Maybe that gave me a more realistic view than if I was watching like Cinemax or something, where everything was all pristine and perfect. And it wasn't just like, I don't know, a bunch of people who looked like they were high school art teacher swapping wives.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was like all like swinger culture and stuff, right?
Yeah, it was disgusting. Every once in a while, there'd be like, there were just not very good looking people on that show, and like nobody under the age of like 50 on that show. But you know, you gotta remember, the internet wasn't around yet, kids. So you had to find titillation where you could.
It's true. Tom, Dilbert mania reached its peak, I think, in 1999.
Mm-hmm. I would argue it reached its peak 2 weeks ago. and it's been downhill ever since.
They made a primetime cartoon show.
Oh, yeah, on UPN, right?
On UPN.
I remember that.
And this is the thing. Okay, so it ran for two seasons.
UPN was what the CW was. The CW and the WB... two new networks that came out of nowhere.
No, UPN and the WB.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, no, you said CW and the WB.
Oh, no, I said they became the CW.
Okay.
Then they later combined and became the CW.
Right.
Which I don't even know what the CW stands for.
It's
Columbia Warner or something like that?
Yeah,
but UPN was the United Paramount Network. So Paramount Plus before Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
And Warner Brothers TV, and especially UPN. UPN, it did not seem like they knew what they were trying to be.
No. They did not have a frog going, hello, my baby. Hello, exactly.
Well, like, the WB at least was, I feel like, kind of leaning on Warner Brothers IP.
Right.
But UPN was just kind of like, I don't know, all over the place.
Like, they tried to dabble in adult animation with not what you're thinking, Tom. I saw your eyes go wide.
It's like, wow, they put that on TV?
with Dilbert. And I think they did a season of Home Movies. Do you remember that show?
Oh,
that
yeah, yeah.
Squiggle Vision mm-hmm. show. But then, like, it was also the home of, like, Moesha.
Yeah.
And I think...
And they had that show about Abraham Lincoln's slave.
Yeah.
Remember?
The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer.
Yeah, there you go. I'm surprised a succinct title like that didn't roll off my tongue the way it did yours.
Well, you alluded to this earlier,
mm-hmm.
but Scott Adams,
mm-hmm.
In June of 2020,
okay,
remember what was going on in the culture then?
Yes,
he said on to his followers on Twitter that the Dilbert cartoon show
mm-hmm.
had been canceled because he was white,
right?
And UPN had made a decision to shift towards African American viewers.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
it does seem pretty obvious that UPN made a decision to shift toward African-American viewers.
Yeah.
But Dilbert probably wasn't canceled because Scott Adams was white.
Yeah.
It's probably because the show did not appeal to African-American viewers.
Yeah, because they were like...
The network was targeting.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, all the white people get out of here. It's like... all the shows that aren't hitting our target demographic now.
Yeah, I was going to say, they saw a hole in the market that...
And like you said, they had... or like we listed some shows, mm-hmm. they threw a lot at the wall, and probably yeah. they saw, we're getting the best thing with... we're getting the best results with shows with primarily black casts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Targeting, you know, an underserved audience in primetime network television.
Yeah. And yeah, there's, yeah, an underserved audience. So, like, let's pivot and have that be. And then somebody raised their hand and they said, should we keep, like, the whitest show anybody's ever made on the network as well? And they were probably like, what? Oh, Dilbert? No.
Yeah. So, like, you can chop that show around when it gets canceled.
Yeah, I'm sure...
Home Movies landed at Adult Swim.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that, you know, again, you can't take Scott Adams at his word, that I'm sure there were other things that was like, oh, also this show is like costing a lot of money to animate and it's not that popular. Because when that came out, that was like after Dilbert's peak, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. Tom, I'll tell you this much.
Mm-hmm.
You know who developed the show for TV?
Who?
Larry Charles.
Oh, wow.
Like the most subversive Seinfeld writer.
Yeah.
The director of Borat.
Mm-hmm.
Did just like a bunch of crazy things.
Yeah.
You know who? All right. You know who was the voice of Dilbert?
Who?
Daniel Stern.
Oh, wow. All right.
You know who was the voice of Dogbert?
Who?
Chris Elliott.
Wow.
This show has a freaking pedigree. Larry Miller was the pointy-haired boss.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that. That makes sense.
Tom Kenny.
SpongeBob himself.
He did the voice of Aesok, who is the...
Yeah, that would probably fly nowadays.
Yeah, I don't think... Jackie Hoffman, who you probably don't know by name.
No, yeah, that name sounds...
You know,
oh,
you know
yeah,
her.
Yeah, yeah.
She's from Only Murders in the Building. She's not,
yeah.
She's
like, mm-hmm.
So she played Dilbert's mom. So you
okay.
got... Oh, Jason Alexander played Catbert.
Oh, wow. All right. So, yeah, and this was around the same time he was doing Duckman, if I'm not,
exactly,
if I'm not
yeah.
mistaken.
So you got Dilbert, Dogbert, and Catbert.
Uh-huh.
What do you think Dilbert's mom is called?
Mombert?
No, Dil Mom.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep people on
their
toes.
There's no consistency in the world of Dilbert, Tom. They'll always keep you on your... So anyway, Jon Favreau did an episode. Mm-hmm. Eugene Levy. Chaz Palminteri.
Wow.
Star-studded.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
There was a really great episode of News Radio that... Mm-hmm. The 90s were Dilbert mania.
Yeah.
Right? Where Andy Dick's, I bit my tongue saying Andy Dick. Shouldn't talk about him. That's God telling me not to talk about Andy Dick's character, Matthew, becomes obsessed with Dilbert after it's wildly popular, but he thinks he's the first person to discover it. And Scott Adams made a cameo, but not as himself.
Yeah, I saw a screenshot of that on Twitter this week where it just said cursed image, and it was Andy Dick, Scott Adams, and Joe Rogan all in a shot together.
Yeah, imagine what that set was like that day.
Yeah.
Then you had like, I don't know. Weird show. Great show.
Very good show, yeah.
Best use of Joe Rogan ever?
Yeah, I mean, Joe Rogan was hysterical on
News Rogan
Radio.
Joe Rogan was Joe Rogan, too. Yeah. Just like a dumb guy who like kind of knew he was dumb, but also just believed in conspiracy theories and ran his mouth a lot.
And he wasn't like all roided out yet. He just looked like a regular guy. Yeah.
You know who originally was cast as him?
Who?
Ray Romano.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. Fired after the pilot.
Wow. I mean, I can see that. Ray Romano wouldn't fit that role as
well. No. I mean, what role is it that, like, it's like, it's either a Ray Romano or Joe Rogan. It's down to the two.
A lot of times it comes down to that in Hollywood.
One other thing indicative of Dilbert mania.
Yeah.
Is the Dilburrito.
Okay. And what was that?
Tom, it was a burrito.
And where could you find this? Was this only at Scott Adams' house? He would make them for guests.
Sorry, I had this up. I closed the window.
How many seasons of that cartoon were there?
Two. It got canceled.
I was gonna say that also strikes me as the kind of thing where, like it could have gone on for like 9 seasons, and I didn't hear about it ever.
Yeah,
and also 2 seasons. In animation, that means they got started on that second season probably before the first season had even aired.
Yeah.
You know, so it's probably like, look, we're committed to making 2 seasons of this. And then I could definitely see by the second season it being like, it's not catching on.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, Dilbert superfan.
We've looked into it, and unfortunately, your demographic of 13-year-old boys have aged out by the time the Dilbert cartoon came around.
The Dilburrito was a vegan microwave burrito introduced in 1999.
Okay.
At the same time they launched the TV show by Scott Adams Foods Incorporated.
God. Why?
I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
His inspiration for the product was that, quote, diet is the number one cause of health-related problems in the world. I figured I could put a dent in that problem and make some money at the same time. His aim was to create a healthy food product that also had mass appeal, which a concept he called the blue jeans of food, which, like, I don't think blue jeans are, like, healthy. I mean, the analogy breaks down a little bit, but I think he was just kind of like, I want to make a microwave burrito that, like, isn't bad for you.
Right.
Like, again, noble cause. I think this is just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think at many times just had too many ideas in his head.
Yeah, I was going to say that I feel like says a lot about him. That he's like one of these guys that thinks something like that is like the solution to society's ills. Like, oh, if only there was a healthy microwave burrito. I'm sure that microwave burrito was not that healthy still. It was still like processed to hell, probably had a ton of salt in it.
Well, Tom, the New York Times said the burrito could have been designed only by a food technologist or by someone who eats lunch without much thought to taste. But Scott Adams...
Oh, okay, so yeah, then that's the other way it could go, that like it is healthy, but it tastes like cardboard.
Like, this is the thing, before people get brain worms, sometimes they can be self-deprecating.
Yeah.
Scott Adams said the mineral fortification was hard to disguise, and because of the veggie and legume content, 3 bites of the Dilburrito made you fart so hard your intestines formed a tail.
Wow.
Which is like, all right, it's a funnier joke than I've ever seen in Dilbert.
Yeah. It's also probably something that he spent like $50 million of his own money. But he's got a lot of money.
This is my thing about Scott Adams.
Uh-huh.
Like, before they took Dilbert out of all the, before his syndicate mm-hmm. dropped him, before yeah. they took it out of, he was probably like rolling in the dough.
Yeah, I have to imagine. I was thinking about that because he said something on Twitter about like, well, my primary source of income has dropped off. And it's like your primary source of income at this point, I'm sure, is investments. Like there's yeah. no way that you're getting paid. I'm sure his like rate has stayed stagnant, maybe even gone down over, or maybe not the rate, but it's like, oh, there just aren't as many newspapers out there anymore. We can't pay you what we were 20, 30 years ago.
I'm sure he's got more money than God.
Yeah, that he was not relying in any way on that money.
This just feeds my theory mm-hmm. that when you get a certain amount of money,
yeah,
shut the fuck up and go away. Like, you're only doing yourself a disservice. Like, yeah. same thing with, like, J.K. Rowling. Like, mm-hmm. just go with your billions of dollars, have your thoughts, tell your friends about them.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't need to do this.
Yeah.
And, like, Scott Adams, you didn't even need to keep, like, you could have just gone to your syndicate and been like, all right, let's run 2005 through 2010 Dilbert for the next 5 years. We'll send those to newspapers, see if anybody notices.
Yeah.
I bet nobody would notice and be Hell, like, oh, they yeah, notice
when somebody drew hair on Charlie Brown.
Exactly. Vandals, Tom. Some claimed it was an inside job.
I've heard that somewhere.
But like, just shut up. Like, I don't understand why people who are super rich and have mm-hmm. like, he said, like, he's a guy who, like, he does a lot of writing.
Yeah. I looked it up because he said, like, oh, my next book got canceled. I like looked it up on Amazon. He's got like 20 books that are like,
yeah, he's got some about like
businessy yeah. type things.
And like, again, he's got a lot of theories.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, it's like, oh, I think what the world needs to solve its ills, like to solve disease, is a microwave burrito that's healthy, right? Uh-huh. Like, it's like, there's some logic to that, but like, he had a book that came out in 2018 called Loser Think,
mm-hmm.
2019, How Untrained Brains Are Ruining America.
Okay.
In the book, he suggests that many otherwise intelligent people are trapped by unproductive ways of thinking. The reason for this is they don't have experience across multiple domains and thus are not equipped to think more productively. Like, and cool, well, like probably, yeah, but also, like, Scott Adams, you don't have to solve this.
Well, also, like, what experience do you have in that? You draw a comic strip.
He's in the comics business. He's in the television business. He's in the burrito business. Well,
exactly. It's like you got into a bunch of other businesses that like pretty much immediately failed. Luckily, you could still keep running this comic strip.
Yeah.
And like, I'm sure the
book, as long as you don't say anything too racist on a live stream.
Yeah. Anything that just like unabashedly, like it's not a dog whistle. It's just saying what you actually think. Yeah, and I'm sure those business books like do okay too. That like he had enough fans. That there's a reason why they kept like pumping those out.
A logic to his business stuff that like it's like okay, yeah, yeah.
Right. It's not reinventing the wheel, but I'm sure there's like common sense stuff in there.
When he's not saying deplorable things, right? It's like, all right, hey, I'd buy a book if you just wrote about farting out your intestines or whatever. He does in that book Loser Think.
Okay.
Suggest two ideas for a calmer internet.
All right.
Number one, the 48-hour rule, where everyone should be given a grace period of a couple of days to retract any controversial statement they've made. He suggested that rule.
Mm-hmm.
And then didn't take it.
Right. And also, it's like, anyone can do that.
Yeah.
Are you saying the rule should be that we all agree if somebody apologizes within 2 days?
Should it be a law? Like a take-backsies law?
Yeah. And also, like, you know, what's the difference between, like, unintentionally using like a, not like a racial slur, but like sometimes people put words in stuff and it's like, oh, I didn't actually know what that word meant. I don't want to say any of the words, but like, and they come out and they're like, I apologize. Like, I'm thinking this happened with, like Beyonce.
Right.
She put, I think, the word spaz in it, and that she like didn't know that it's like, cause that's more of like a term that's used.
I think that was Lizzo, Tom.
Oh, was it Lizzo?
Oh, no. I think they
might have both done it. Yeah. But that's the thing, that it's like in the UK, they use that as like a derogatory term, like, mm-hmm. oh, that person's a spaz. Where here, it's like, oh, I spazzed out. And, you know, when people pointed out to these people, they were like, oh, shit, I had no idea. I'll change it. I'm so sorry. It goes away.
Yeah.
Like that. And that's the thing about cancel culture. It's like, no, when you sincerely just fuck up and apologize, most of the time people are given a pretty wide berth.
Yeah. The other thing is that was the 48 hour rule. This is the 20 year rule.
Okay.
Where everyone should be automatically forgiven for any mistakes they made more than two decades ago, with the exception of certain very serious crimes. Like to know what Scott Adams is concerned is going to come out about him in the 90s. Yeah.
Look, if somebody's managed to keep something quiet for 20 years, they should be allowed to get away with it. But I mean, again, it's like, yeah, that pretty much is the way things work. Like people, if something happened two decades ago.
And you show contrition and you show growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then it's fine. But yeah, I mean, I love that all these people have these like kind of like, you know, all these free speech absolutionists have these like dictatorial authoritarian ideas about like, but we should tell everybody how to think and whether they should be mad or not.
He's also like a guy that's like obsessed with like persuasion, and he's like a hypnotist.
He's been married twice, and both times I think it was so like, you know, like women in their early mid-20s.
Yeah. He took Dale Carnegie training.
Oh, okay.
Called it life-changing.
Yeah. That's how he became so persuasive. That's how he's made so many friends and influenced so many people.
He's really into affirmations. Did I say this before?
Oh yeah. No, you didn't say it before, but I think I read something about that like he's one of these people that would like write down what he wanted or say it out loud.
Yeah, and like he wrote a long thing like in the early 90s about like how he was just like, he wrote every day like 15 times, Scott Adams will be a syndicated cartoonist. Scott Adams will be a syndicated. And he's like, I know that doesn't put energy into the world. He's like, to me, that was like something that seemed so far off.
Yeah.
But like writing it that much, like tricked my brain. I did it every day for 6 months and it tricked my brain into thinking it was something achievable. And it allowed me to actually pursue. And it's like, I think there's a little, you know,
Hocus-pocus-y?
Yeah, but also it's like, it seems harmless and like, right, yeah, it does, maybe.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that takes you 3 minutes in the morning. It's fine.
Yeah, but in that article, he also wrote, I'm not doing any affirmations at the moment, mostly because I already have everything I want except a Nobel Prize. And that, even that wouldn't change my life much, which I would argue winning the Nobel Prize. Like,
that changes
probably,
everybody.
No, I don't know. If you're already got like millions and millions of dollars.
If somebody like him won a Nobel, how would he win it?
How would his day-to-day life change?
He'd be more respected. He wouldn't be Scott Adams. He wouldn't be like, I don't know, just like a rich idiot.
It just makes me like, I already have everything I want except the Nobel Prize. Then stop. Cash out, man.
Yeah.
Stop talking on the internet. Just go like.
Yeah.
If you like writing Dilbert every day.
Yeah.
Freaking do it.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to know anything about you. I want to pull that casual day has gone too far shirt out of my closet and wear it proudly. But I don't think that's going to happen. Well,
now it's completely out of circulation. Yeah, I don't know. It's a wild thing. I mean, he honestly, like, and I'm not even like trying to, shit on him. Not that he doesn't deserve that, but he seems like an incredibly lonely person.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the reason why he's like doing a live stream every week or every day or something he was doing, it's like, yeah, I don't think he has like people around him. I think he's probably alienated everybody he knows.
Some sycophants, though.
I'm sure he's got some sycophants, but look, Tim, a sycophant's never going to completely fulfill like a narcissist's desire to have connection with other people.
Yeah. It just seems like he's one of these guys that's like always trying to like logic things and like, yeah, and like along the lines of those like 48-hour rules and 20. Mm-hmm. It's like, stop trying to like apply.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like it's the same line of thinking of like the guys that set up those tables. And it's like, change my mind. It's
yeah.
Like, I don't think everybody just wants to debate all the time. I think people just want to live their lives. And like, it's cool, Scott Adams, that you're always thinking about like, well, the reason that people aren't as productive as they could be is because they're not thinking across multiple disciplines. It's like, dude, just fucking watch a movie or something.
Yeah.
Or like,
well, and also,
go for a bike ride.
I also think there's like a tendency of people like that to be like, I'm going to tackle the big problems. I don't really have any life experience. I haven't really like had a conversation, a meaningful conversation with like anyone.
He worked in corporate America for almost a decade before he started cartooning.
Yeah, but that was 35 years ago. Yeah. Like I'm saying nowadays that it's like, when do you think the last time he's talked to somebody who wasn't like a sycophant, work for him, or also a multimillionaire?
Mm.
You know? And these people don't actually get any contact with like the outside world. And then they think, I know the solution to everything and I know how to impose it on them. And it's like, that's not the way reality works.
Nobody wants that. And you don't have to do that. Nobody's asking you to solve any problems, Scott Adams.
Yeah. Right. But Dogbert might be.
Dogbert doesn't need the help. Dogbert, Tom. Maybe, several times I read he took over the world successfully and then got bored.
Wow.
Because there was he presided over peace and prosperity and he's like, yeah, this is too boring, and he gave it back up. So I think there's like a fascist dictatorial streak in Scott Adams' thinking too. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Where it's if I could just rule the world and
if I could just tell everybody
exactly what to do.
If I could tell these 23-year-old women that I date and marry that they should stay dating me.
I don't know that that's true, Tom. I don't think we should slander the man. Libel. What's the thing?
Well, you're the diehard fan, so I'll defer to you.
This concludes our discussion about the comic strip Dilbert.
If you like the show, you can find out more at tcgte.com. You can find our social media links there. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Tom Reynolds.
Follow me at your pal Tim.
And you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/completeguide, where we read books every week. But this week, we're not reading books. We're watching a movie. We just read the Bible. Well, we read an abridged version of the Bible. And then we watched Dogma. The Kevin Smith movie, which also was a favorite of yours as a teenager.
Yeah. So I was a big Kevin Smith.
I thought
Chasing Amy was the deepest movie.
It's Team Tim week on the Complete Guide to Everything in Books, the podcast. So you can check that out. You get all the back episodes, all that stuff.
It's amazing I turned out to be like a semi-normal person. Don't say what I think you're going to say.
I mean, it's amazing that you're not worse, but
I'm a functional adult. I bought a Subaru Forester, goddammit.
Have you gotten that yet?
No, I had to keep delaying it.
All right.
I don't want to talk about it.
You brought it up. Patreon.com/completeguide, in case I didn't say that again. Tim, you failed to mention that Scott Adams, at least at one time, if not currently, lives in a castle shaped like Dilbert's head.
I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
Search that real quick. Dilbert Castle, and take a look at this thing. I don't know if he... I don't know who you could sell that to, but I click images. You know how search engines work?
Turn save search off?
Maybe searched Scott Adams Dilbert Castle. I mean, I imagine he still lives in it because
this thing.
Yeah. Because how are you going to sell somebody a Dilbert Castle? Also,
I mean,
that's
13.
That's like a real.
That's not a great picture.
A guy like that, like, oh, I'm going to live in an actual castle.
Yeah.
And like anyone will tell you, like, actually, castles suck. They're drafty and moldy. Like, it was the best they could think of, you know, 600 years ago, but we've come up with better ideas for things. But I don't know. Only so many structures you can shape like Dilbert's head.
Tom, a sales guy comes up to Dilbert. Dilbert's doing work at his computer, and a guy from sales comes up.
Okay. Says, oh, boy. One of these guys from sales.
I hate sales. Can you cross-train me to be an engineer? Dilbert's an engineer, you see.
Yeah.
Dilbert says, absolutely. All you need is a time machine and a brain with twice as many folds as your current model.
Owned.
That's not even the punchline, Tom.
Okay.
The salesman has second thoughts after hearing that. Maybe I could try marketing.
Oh, which, I see. Then does Dilbert say something?
Dilbert says, even he freaking twists the knife. That's just liquor and guessing.
Oh.
14-year-old Tim was like, I want to buy a shirt. Take my money, Scott Adams.
All right. We'll see you next
week. I kind
of
get it now. I think it's kind of amusing. I don't know.
That was a HeadGum podcast.